Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
So today we're going to talk about Parshas Vayeshev, which begins with the story of Joseph's dreams. And we will be revisiting those nocturnal visions. And I do think that there is a distinct possibility that this class could change your life, or at least a part of it. So you're forewarned. You may never look at dreams in the same way again. Well, I don't want to leave that dangling, so let's go straight into it. The parsha begins with our father Jacob, who is now settled safely in the city of Hebron. This is the region where his father had lived and his grandfather. His grandfather is buried there. His grandmother is buried there. Ultimately, his mother gets buried there. And later on, his father will get buried in Hebron too. But this was a natural place for Jews to live. Hebron was our homeland. And at this point, Yaakov Avinu, after having overcome many, many challenges, a life of difficulty, turmoil, overcoming issues with his brother, the internal strife that he lived with as a child, and then reaches a breaking point where Yaakov, our father Jacob, takes the blessings. And then he has to run away to save his life, and he deals with our father-in-law, who is another story altogether, and he has to raise a Jewish family in Las Vegas, or something like that. A very immoral place. And he raises these Jewish children, and he comes home. And then there's more problems. He has to meet Esav again, and that's an issue. And then there's a terrible story with Dina. Dina gets raped, and they have to rescue her. All these terrible things. And then his wife dies, if that wasn't enough. And so he's now safely settled. He just wants a little peace and quiet. You know, just let me, like, just be a nice... Just be a nice yid. Just be a nice Rebbe, you know. Learn Torah, teach my children, try to make a difference in the world. But that's not to be. Kofza Olav Rugza Shal Yosef Rasi tells us the angst, the anger, the difficulty, the frustration that will now evolve from the strife that develops within Yaakov's own family, within his own children. Now you have to understand that in some way Yaakov is responsible for this, because he treats Yosef differently than the rest of his brothers. And that's very strange, because Yaakov is a master educator. He's one of the best fathers of all time. Avram Avinu has two sons. One son is Yitzchak, who is a righteous replication. If he's not the same style, or the same gestalt, or the same approach, but he's certainly equally righteous. Another son, Yishmael, is not such a nice boy. At some point, he's basically a sexual abuser, trying to mess around with his little brother. Sarah has to throw him out of the house to save Yitzchak. Yes, he does the tshuva eventually as an old person. He does tshuva, that's true. But there's no Yiddish anachas, as we say, from Yishmael. And Yitzchak, who's a very diligent father, a very dedicated father, he does not succeed with Esav. Not for lack of trying, but he doesn't succeed. Yaakov is the first one in the Torah who has a perfect family. Now, I know the family dynamics are very far from perfect. Remember, we're Jewish. We have to be fighting. We have to be arguing. We have to have different opinions. Understood. It's not the perfect picture of family peace and serenity. But Yaakov, all of his children remain loyal and devoted to the teachings of Avraham and Yitzchak, to the morals of Sarah and Rivka, to that which he has been given, he's able to pass it on fully. And about Yaakov Avinu, we say, mitato shlema, which is a euphemism for his children, his progeny. He's got a perfect score. He doesn't lose a single child. In the end, all of his children are fully righteous. And yes, some make mistakes, and they become trailblazers in the arena of tshuva. They're all good. And not only this, Yaakov Avinu has to raise these children in an environment that is entirely hostile to everything he believes in. Yaakov is a man of integrity. Yaakov is a man of decency. His own father-in-law is the polar opposite. And it's not like you could insulate the kids. It's not as if Yaakov could have lived in some ghetto. He was living with his father-in-law. He was in business with his father-in-law. I'm sure the children went to the Zaidi. Maybe they'll call him grandpa. I don't know. He won't be the first non-Jew who has Jewish grandchildren. But he raises children in the worst kind of environment, in a place that was considered charein afshal makom, a place that provokes the angst and anger of God. And Yaakov raises his children there. And he brings home this family of beautiful Jewish children. Children who are totally devoted to Yaakov, to Rachel and Leah, and not to Lavan, and not to their uncles. That's no small feat. So it would be a big mistake for anybody to think that Yaakov is not a good father, not a good educator. And how does he make such a mistake? How does he show favoritism to one son and lavish all this attention on that one son, and that causes jealousy in the family? The whole thing is so unwieldy. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Now, that's not the subject of tonight's class, but let me try to give you a little bit of background, just so you appreciate how we arrive at this lack of family peace, how we arrive at this point where the brothers cannot even speak to each other, or cannot speak to Yosef. You have to understand that Yaakov Avinu is not just living within the frame of his time. He's living as a visionary. He knows that there is a nation that will emerge from this family. This is the nascent Jewish people, not the family of Jacob. And he knows that when there'll be many brothers, somebody is going to have to be the leader. Somebody's going to have to be guiding the rest of the family. Who will be the one to ultimately replace Yaakov Avinu? Who will lead the next generation? Now, this issue of succession has been a problem from the beginning. Yishmael wanted, or Hagar wanted Yishmael to have succession, and that's not going to work. Hashem says, you listen to Sarah, send him away. So Yitzchak is the heir. And Yitzchak and Rivka fight vehemently about who should be the heir, who should carry on this job of nation building. Who will be the next patriarch? Who will build the Jewish people? Yaakov is selected. But now Yaakov knows that he is going to have not one child, but he strives to have all of his children remain righteous. 12 tribes. 12 tribes from whom this nation will be built. Who will be the leader? You cannot have 12 leaders. Somebody's got to be able to push the agenda forward. Somebody's got to be able to galvanize the rest of the family. Who will that be? Clearly it's Joseph. Yaakov Avinu sees his own experiences reflected in the frame of Yosef's life, even though Yosef is just a boy. He sees that, on first of all, Yaakov Avinu only stayed with Lavan because of Rachel. That was his first love, so to speak. That was the focus. That was his real zivug. And Yosef is that child. That's the long-awaited child. Binyamin's a baby. And Binyamin is a boy who grows up without a mother. Yaakov loses Rachel, but he has Yosef. And remember, Binyamin was given the name Benoni, the son of my agony and pain. Yaakov has to kind of rotate that. Imagine a child growing up with a name like pain, agony. Hi, what's your name? Agony. It's like, he calls him Benjamin, but he doesn't want to disrespect his wife. This is the name his wife gave. So he gives it a slight tweak. He calls it Benjamin instead of Benoni, Benjamin, which means son on the right, which is connected to Israel. He's the only one of the Shvatim who was actually born in the Holy Land. So it's Yosef who is going ultimately to represent and to claim his father's inheritance fully. That's what Yaakov sees very clearly. Now, this does not mean that Yaakov does not appreciate the spiritual value and virtue of the rest of his children. He knows that Leah's children have great merit. And he knows that they have a very different approach to life, a very different approach to spirituality, to the ideals and ideas that we call Judaism and Yiddishkeit. And they need to be led from within as well. Reuven, the eldest, Yaakov is disappointed. After Rachel's passing, Reuven acted impetuously. He meddled in his father's affairs. He cannot be a leader. He doesn't have the necessary stamina. Shimon and Levi, they carried out a massacre. And they didn't even talk to him before. Can't trust him. So it's Yehuda. And incidentally, our sages tell us that Yehuda did have a mark of distinction. He was like the king amongst his brothers. And Yaakov even made Yehuda a special coat. We don't hear about that coat. We hear about Yosef's coat. It was more colorful. But Yehuda had a special raiment. He had a designation. He was like the Melech Sheba'achim. And of course, from Yehuda comes Jewish monarchy, not from Yosef. But it was Yosef who is really singled out, because Yaakov sees within him, he is the one who will be able to promulgate the values, to be able to push forward everything that Yiddishkeit represents and everything that the Jewish people are supposed to become. The Medrash tells us that Yaakov Avinu was born circumcised. He did not require a bris milah. Yosef is the only one of the Shvatim who was also born circumcised, not require a bris milah. Both were born to mothers who had been barren for a very long time. Rivka doesn't have children, and she cries, and she's very, very upset, and Rachel has the same kind of experience. So Yaakov, in a sense, was that long-awaited child, and Yosef was this long-awaited child. Both of the mothers had two children. Yitzchak and Rivka have Yaakov and Esav, and Rachel has Yosef and Binyamin. Both of them had brothers who plotted to kill them. Esav was planning to kill Yaakov, and Yosef's brothers were planning to kill him. They actually tried to kill him. Both suffered and wrestled against the power of evil. It's, of course, Yaakov, as we learned in the last week's class, who wrestles with that arch angel of evil, the Darth Vader of the Torah. And it's Yosef who has to wrestle with a different kind of Darth Vader, with the Yetzirah. When the first desperate housewife in history, Potiphar's wife, throws herself at Yosef, and she tries to seduce him, and he comes within a hair's breadth of sinning, and he overcomes, he wrestles with that Yetzirah. And our sages talk about the extraordinary nature of Yosef being able to overcome temptation, never replicated again in Jewish history. There's a Gemara that has a discussion about a person who also withheld himself in a remarkable way. And the Gemara discusses, since the time of Yosef, nobody ever contained himself in that fashion. And the Mefarshim say, well, not exactly like Yosef. It was in the image of Yosef. And nobody can be like Yosef. So in this way, there's something similar. Both end up going to a foreign land, and that's where they get married. Yaakov gets married in Haran, far away from Israel. Yosef gets married in Egypt. Both raise their children in an environment that is hostile to everything Judaism represents, and both are successful in raising their children there. Yaakov raises his children in Haran, Yosef raises his children in Mitzrayim. And both began the trajectory of ascendancy through a dream. For Yaakov, it's in his lowest moment, when he's cold, tired, and alone, pursued by his brother, mugged, robbed by his nephew, going into an uncertain future without having the means and the wherewithal to be able to make a difference. And then he lies down to sleep and he has that vision. It's a prophecy, but it's a dream. The dream of Ufaratzta. And Yosef's future ascendancy is alluded to also with a dream. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Yosef's dreams. So we have so much similarity. By the way, Yaakov had a really, really miserable father-in-law. His name was Lavan. Yosef had a miserable father-in-law too. His name was Potiphar. That's the guy who threw him into prison. So there's many similarities here. And Yaakov therefore sees that Yosef is the one. And because Yosef is the one, of course he has to be a good father and he has to be concerned with the welfare of his children. He has to try to guide them. But he's building a nation. And in this nation building, he needs to ensure that there's going to be not only a nice 5 years, 10 years, not only a nice family life, he needs to ensure that things go well in the future. Who is going to take the bull by the horns? Who is going to be able to lead the Jewish people as they go into Galut? And Yaakov knows they're going to go into Galut. Who will be able to guide them during the dark and dismal period? If not Yosef. So he gives Yosef special attention. And the brothers knew Yosef was special. So they were jealous, which is only natural. And Yaakov is between a rock and a hard spot. Because on one hand, he needs to give Yosef this extra attention. But on the other hand, he's trying to maintain some kind of peace in the family. And that brings us to tonight's class. Brings us to tonight's class because we hear that Yisrael Ohaves Yosef, chapter 37, verse 3. Yisrael, which is, of course, the other name for Yaakov, Israel or Jacob, loves Yosef. Mikol bonav ki ben zikunim hulo. Because he is very special. He looks like him. He's the most studious of his children. He's the most interested in hearing the wisdom, in learning the teachings. It reminds Yaakov of his own studious youth. And that's why he's the one. And therefore he makes for him a fine woolen robe, a raiment of distinction. So how do you think the brothers felt about this distinction that was being afforded to Yosef? They were not happy. They were not happy, to say the least. I want to share with you an interesting nuance before we go into the dreams. It's very important to understand that when we talk about the biblical stories, there is always more than meets the eye. When you read the Chumash, you're looking at the tip of the iceberg. When 95% or perhaps more of the story is submerged and has to be delved into and has to be studied to be fully appreciated, that these are people who are much larger than life, that the events and the narratives in their life are much, much bigger than the details, that we read or understand. And there's a lot of prophetic intuition. So one of the interesting things about this relationship between Yosef and his brothers, or about the Kesonis Pasim, is a fascinating medrash. The medrash says that the reason that Joseph's brothers first began to hate him, the reason they first began to hate him was because of? No. Look again. Because of the coat. That's why the Broadway is about Joseph and the multicolored coat. The coat. The coat is where all the problems start. A coat. So buy yourself your own coat. But you don't like his fancy coat? Find yourself a tailor. Make yourself your own. Really? Is that the issue? Like that's what you hate him for? Dad bought him a nice coat. So buy yourself a nice coat. You can't speak to him because of a coat. The truth is, the coat is not so simple, and there's something very profound behind it, and we talked about that in classes in the past. But here is something much deeper that you'll not notice on the surface. The Medrash Rabbah says that Tchilas Ha'alila, that the beginning of the libeling of Yosef was because of the coat. But it really was because they had a sense that Yosef was somehow the one who would unlock the destiny of the Jewish people. They somehow knew that there would be moments when only Yosef could carry the day. What is this? So we have an expression in the Medrash. And you'll see how this kind of comes together. The Medrash says, Antilim, when we talk about in the Hallel prayer, about the sea that split. So chapter 114 begins, Betzeis Yisrael Mimitzrayim, Jewish people are going out of Egypt, and Yehuda gets an honorable mention right in the beginning. And then it says, Hayam Ra'ah, Vayonos. The sea saw and it shrank. It shrank. It receded. What did it see that caused it to shrink? From what was it running away? So the Yalkut Shemini says, Ra'a Arono Shel Yosef. You all know that story that Yosef, before he dies, at the very end of his book, he tells the Jewish people, when you will leave this land, make sure you take my coffin with you. Which is not unlike the story of Yaakov, who calls Yosef and he says, make sure you take my coffin with you. Both are embalmed in Egypt. Both are later transferred into the holy land of Eretz Yisrael. And they're buried there. Yaakov in Hebron, Yosef in Shechem. Both cities are mentioned in this week's Parsha. So when Moshe Rabbeinu was about to leave Mitzrayim, they said, one second, we need to recover the coffin of Yosef. And there's a whole story of how that's recovered, but Moshe Rabbeinu took personal responsibility for the transportation of that coffin. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu has the coffin of Yosef with him, and the Medrash says, Ma ra'a vayonis, says the Medrash, Ra'a arono shel Yosef. It saw the coffin of Yosef, and it shrank. How do we get that? That so the coffin of Yosef, Vayonos. So the Medrash Rabbah says, because when Yosef wrestled with his Darth Vader demon, when he was about to be seduced and he found this incredible inner strength to pull himself away, it says, Vayazov bigdo biyada, he left his jacket or his shirt or tunic in her hands, in Potiphar's wife's hands, Vayonos, he shrank, Vayetze hachutza, he ran outside. So there's a corollary between the word Vayonos. Ayomra Vayonos, the seesaw and shrank. When it was Yosef, says the Medrash, he shrank. Same words. There's no accidents here. And so, it was Yosef's spirit that caused the sea to shrink in fear. It's interesting to note that there's another version of this Medrash, and the other version of the Medrash, it doesn't say, Arono shel Yosef. In the other version, this is the Alkot Shimoni, the Medrash says, Bizechut atzmotav shel Yosef, in the merit of the bones of Joseph. That's why the sea split. And the Medrash also brings the same pasuk of Vayonis. And the obvious question is, why do we have to talk about Joseph's bones? Couldn't we talk about his coffin? Bones is not a nice way to refer to somebody. And the Rebbe suggests that the word bone, or etzem, also means the essence of. It was the essence of Yosef's strength. It was the essence of Yosef's spirituality that enabled the Jewish people to overcome this difficulty in that moment when they were between a rock and a hard spot, the Egyptian army is coming down from behind them, that the mountains are on either side and the sea is before them. The brothers sensed that there's something different about this guy. They knew Yosef was different. So that's what the Medrash talks about. And the commentaries in the Medrash say that the word ksonet pasim, which Rashi himself tells us there's a number of different interpretations, is also a conjunction of the words pas yam. Pasya means splitting of the sea. So it wasn't just a coat. They knew somehow that Yosef represents something much more profound, much deeper, much more powerful. They knew somehow that the destiny of the Jewish people seemed to be tied to Yosef and his virtues. And that they would fall short, but he would not. So the coat represents something. It's not a jacket. It represents the attention that Yaakov lavished on Yosef. It represents and it brings forth the sense of importance that Joseph carried with himself and the sense of importance that they knew he rightfully had. But we don't have a good situation. Which brings me to tonight's subject. So Joseph's got dreams. One more thing I wanted to share with you about the business with the dreams. And then we'll go straight into the dreams, but about this business with Joseph and his coat. Interestingly, the Baal HaTurim notes that when it comes to the dreams, it says, Vayigar bo'aviv, his father chides him later on. This is at the end of the story of the dreams. Yosef's telling everybody of the dreams, and he's causing everybody to hate him, so his father chides him. He says, stop talking like that already. What kind of narishkeit is this? Those dreams would never happen anyway. So the word is Vayigar. But interestingly, in the 106th chapter of Tillim, it says, Vayigar b'yamsuf v'yecharav. He chided the sea, and the sea dried out. So the Baal HaTurim sees a corollary, similar corollary. Here we see it in the beginning with the kesonet pasim pasyam. The Baal HaTurim sees that there's business with Yosef and the sea shrinking. So there's multiple kind of connections between that moment when the Jewish people's future hung in balance and the zuchut, the merit of Yosef. And this is the background that brings us to the story of Yosef's dream. So he's got a dream. He knows that he's special. His father knows he's special. The brothers know he's special. Maybe nobody understands exactly how or why he's special, but everybody knows the man is special and he's destined for greatness. And they don't like him because of that. Now, what would you do? You're destined for greatness. You're not loved because of that. And then you have a dream about ruling over everybody. Probably if you give the words I'll use, probably the stupidest thing you could do is tell the brothers, oh, by the way, I had a dream, I'm going to be a king over you. Why would Joseph do that? You had a dream. Firstly, everybody knows you're special. You've been talked about in special terms. The brothers are jealous because they know there really is something unique and different. It's in your mind. So if that's what you're thinking about, and that's what you know about, and that you're destined for this greatness, so you dreamt about it, big deal. You have to go and tell people about it. I mean, you have to create more acrimony than there is. And this Yosef's called Bar Hakim. He's called the wise, the discerning son. Did he not have the intelligence, the wisdom to know that when you're in a precarious situation to begin with and there's a lot of jealousy, you don't have to flaunt these kind of things? Like you could be a little understated? You don't have to go and stick it in the face. Oh, I had a dream last night. Yeah, you were bowing to me. Not just you, we were all bowing to me. And then he has to go tell his father about it. And his father finally has to chide him and say, Yosef, what are you doing? For heaven's sake, keep this to yourself. It's bad enough that's what you dream about. The whole story is so strange. The story of Yosef's dreams, okay, it's a dream. A dream is a dream. Why in heaven did he tell his brothers about it? This is the big question that I pose to you tonight. And when we're finished answering this question, you may never look at your dreams the same again. So let's first make the case that what Yosef did was very unwise. Let's talk about what Yosef did. Yosef decided to go and tell everybody about his dreams. Yes, Yosef's greatness comes through dreams. Get it? The Medrash HaGadol says, Yosef Yorod Al Yedei Chalom. Yosef, he is the beginning of his descent. His life is torn apart because of dreams. And Yosef rises to greatness because of dreams. His dreams destroy his life. The Pharaoh's dreams catapult him to a position of global importance. Okay, I get it. We get it. Yosef is like Yaakov. Yaakov's destiny begins with dreams. Yosef's destiny begins with dreams. Okay, why do you have to talk about it? So Yosef didn't just talk about it. It says, Vayachalom Yosef. Please look inside. This is important because the words, the pasuk seems to be redundant here. Let's take a look at verse 4. Vayiru echov ki oiso ahavavim. The brothers saw Yosef's beloved, Mikal Echov. So how did they react to that? Yaakov has no choice. Yaakov has to create leadership, and leadership is going to be Yosef. Okay, how did the brothers react? Vayisnu oiso. They hate him for it. They don't just hate him for it, but it comes to a situation, v'layachlu dabrei l'sholem, they cannot bring themselves to speak to him. Imagine what the dinner table must have felt like. Maybe everybody's having a conversation, Yosef walks and all of a sudden the table goes silent. They're giving him the cold shoulder. They didn't speak to the brother. And Yaakov is trying to balance this. He's an orphan, he doesn't have a mother, he's sensitive. They didn't speak to him. They could not bring themselves to speak to him. Rashi says this is because they were men of integrity. They were very honest. If they couldn't stand him, they weren't going to make believe. There's no politics here. They weren't going to smile and stab him in the back. They wouldn't deal with him. So you have a situation, your brothers don't want to talk to you because of your perceived importance and future grandeur. Says the Torah, chapter 37, verse 5, Vayachalim Yosef. So Yosef has a dream. It's got a Vayachalim Yosef Chalim. Yosef dreams a dream. All right. Vayaged le'echov. He goes and tells his dream. Vayasifu oitzna yosef. Yeah, they didn't hate him yet. Now they for sure hate him. I mean, of course they hate him. They're not even on talking terms up until this point, before the dreams begin. So tonight we'll begin the narrative of the dreams. At this point, they're not on talking terms. He's got a dream, and he tells them a dream, and they hate him even more. Wonderful. Vayomer aleihem. You know what a vav in Hebrew is? Va. And. And he says to them, Shimunu achaloyim azeh asher chalamti. Listen carefully. I want you to listen to this dream I had. Verse 5, he had his dream. He told it to his brothers. They hate him. Verse 6, he says, listen to the dream I have. And he goes through the details of the dream. And then the pasuk concludes in verse 8, they laugh at him. They mock his dream. Vayasifu oid snoyisay. Now they hate him even more. Al chaloy moisov, plural. Val dvarov, and on his words. How many dreams were there here? How many dreams are there? There's one dream. In verse 7, the dream is about sheaves of wheat. Sheaves of wheat that are being processed by the brothers. And then the sheaves, everybody's sheaf bows down to Yosef's sheaf, which stands tall and erect, and everybody else's sheaf is bowing down to the bundle of Yosef. That's the dream. So the brothers in verse 8 say, what do you think? You're going to be the king? You're going to rule over us? And now they hate him even more. Even more than when? Even more than verse 4 or even more than verse 6? In verse 4 it says, they hate him. Vayisnu oisay. In verse 4 it says, they hate him so much, l'yachlu dabu l'shalom. That's what it says in verse 4. In verse 5 it says, he told them about his dream. And what was the reaction to hearing about his dream? They hate him. How much do they hate him? Oid. More. That happens in verse 6. So they hate him. They hate him in verse 4 to the point they're not talking to him already. That's pretty serious. You've got to really hate somebody not to talk to him, especially if it's your brother. They're not on speaking terms with the brother before he has any dreams. Then he's got a dream. He tells them about the dream. They hate him even more. That's in verse 5. Now we go to verse 8. They mock the dream and they hate him even more. Vayosifu oid. Why does the Torah say the same thing twice? Why does the Torah say in verse 5 that he had a dream, he told them about the dream, they hated him more than before? And then the Torah says, he said to them, and he said, let me tell you the details of my dream. So he tells them the details of his dream, they mock the details, and now they hate him even more. I'm asking a simple question. What happened in verse 5, and what happened in verse 8? Od in Hebrew means more. Vayosif, yosifu, means more. So we have two words that are describing a greater volume of more hate. Why does the Torah have to say that? He had a dream, he told them they hated him more. He had a dream, he told them the details, they mocked the details, they hated him more. So fascinatingly, in the Sefer that was written by Rabbi Vadya Bar Tanura, this book is known as the Amar Noka, Rabbi Vadya Bar Tanura says that there is a third dream. A third dream which is not spoken of. Interestingly, the Bali HaTosfos and the Chizkuni also speak about a third dream. They don't say what the third dream was, and they say it was a third dream that was never fulfilled. And that's why the Torah doesn't talk about it. But the Bar Tanura says, oh yes, yes, we know what the dream was. And they hated him for it. Well, what was the dream? Okay, take your Chumash now, and I want you to turn to the end of Parshas Vayechi. End of the book, okay? I'm going to show you something interesting. I'm taking you to after the blessings, after Yaakov's passing, after Yaakov's funeral. What happens next? They go back to Egypt. And it's not the same. It's not the same. How come it's not the same? I don't know. Yosef's not so close to his brothers. Why isn't he close to his brothers? Well, because when his father was alive, they'd all go to the father for the Hanukkah party. I mean, they didn't celebrate Hanukkah, but you know what I mean. And now the father's dead, so obviously Yosef has his own grandchildren by now. So he was with his family, they were their family. There was a certain glue that kept them together. Yaakov kept them together. Our father Jacob dies. The Elta Zaidi, the old Zaidi, is gone. So everybody has his own little fiefdom, his own little family. It's a terrible thing. But the brothers interpret this. They say, something's changed. And they start to speak amongst themselves. Go to chapter 50 and take a look in verse 15. It says, they said, Lu yistameinu Yosef. Uh-oh. I bet you he's nursing that grudge. I bet you he's been waiting to strike back at us. And the reason he didn't strike back at us, he didn't want to bring pain to our father. But now our father's dead. Sound familiar? Esav wasn't going to kill Yaakov because he didn't want to bring pain to his parents. But Esav never gave up. And in fact, he came to Yaakov's funeral, tried to block Yaakov. And they ended up getting buried the same day. But that's a story for a different night. So they go to Yosef and they say, our father instructed, and this is not true. But they're terrified. So they say an untruth. Our father instructed us to tell you, forgive your brothers. Forgive them. Don't repay them for what they did to you. We tried to kill you. Don't harm us. Yosef hears these words. He begins to weep. He's totally shocked. Because he never thought, Yosef never imagined doing something like that. And he says to them, what are you talking about? Do you think I'm instead of God? God, do you think I could be in God's place? Clearly, you tried to hurt me. All 10 of you tried to hurt me. And what happened? And I became the most powerful man in the world. Second most powerful man. So clearly, God decided I'm not being harmed. 10 of you tried to harm me, and it didn't work. Do you think I'm going to be able to harm all 10 of you? Really? Like, what are you thinking here? The next verse, verse 21... Yosef says to them, have no fear. I will take care of you. The truth is, the family wasn't so close anymore. But you will always be taken care of. Vayinachim osam. He comforts them. Vayedaber al libam. He speaks to their heart. How does he speak to the heart? What did he do? So Rashi says something incredible. Rashi says, first of all, Yosef spoke words of logic to them. He said, what do you think the Egyptians are going to say? Here, this guy was a slave. A slave who suddenly became the viceroy. Everybody is trying to figure out how he rose to greatness. He's got no family, he's got no lineage, he's got no background. All of a sudden, he discovered a family. Out of the blue. He has 11 brothers, a huge family. Wow, very impressive. And then he decided to kill them all. You think that was really his family? He adopted a family, it looked good for him. Well, he wasn't interested, he got rid of them. He also says, it would be the dumbest thing for me to do. Why would I do that? But then Rashi says something else. He quotes the Gemara, the words of the Gemara in Tainus, and he says, Asara Nerot lo yachlu lechabot ner achad. 10 flames cannot extinguish a single flame. And the Gemara goes on to talk about this. What does that have to do? 10 flames, a single flame? The question was, could Yosef extinguish the souls of his 10 brothers? Take revenge. What is Rashi talking about when he says 10 flames cannot extinguish a single flame? This Rashi is a mystery. Rabbi Avadya Bar Tanur says, no, it's not. This is not a mystery at all. This is the rest of the story. What was the first dream? The first dream was that 10 flames couldn't extinguish a single flame. Yosef came to his brothers. He said, you guys don't like me, huh? And they didn't talk to him. They just like turned away from him. He says, you think you're going to be able to harm me? You think you're going to be able to get in my way? Let me tell you about my dream last night. There was 10 flames, but 10 flames couldn't extinguish one flame. Who's he talking about? He's talking about his brothers and himself. He's saying, don't even try. I'm invincible. So his brothers don't even respond. They don't respond. What should they say about that? Yosef essentially says, I'm not afraid of you. Why didn't you get used to it? In what we call maybe a popular culture parlance, he said, suck it up, guys. I'm here to stay. You cannot overcome me. I have this dream. How do you think they felt about that dream? They don't like him very much. Now that dream, of course, is fulfilled. When is that dream fulfilled? Says Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam, that dream is fulfilled when the 10 of them throw him into a pit. And the pit of snakes and scorpions. And they went to eat lunch. Enough time for a snake and scorpion to kill him. And yet, they pulled him out and he was still alive. And then they sold him into slavery. And he was sold to 3 different groups, or maybe even more. And he ends up going to Egypt. And what happens? He becomes viceroy. No. Can one flame be extinguished by 10 flames? No. He also says, don't you see? That was my vision from the beginning. I told you about this then. Now, if all of you couldn't harm me, and I told you about that then, and you ignored me, do you think that I would be foolish to try to harm all of you? In other words, what Rashi's saying is that when Yosef speaks words that talk to the heart, he's continuing the first conversation. The first conversation with them was, he says, "Atachas alekim ani? You think I'm instead of God? I can't harm you." But that's like philosophical talk. It's philosophical. How could I do what God doesn't want me to do? I know a lot of people do things that God doesn't want them to do. Or so they think. So he also speaks to them emotional words. Words that tug at the heart. He reminds them of a story that happened many years ago. He says, you remember? You remember we were just kids? And we were fighting? And you didn't like me? Remember I told you about that dream? Do you think I tried to harm you? So that's the dream. And this makes a lot of sense. First of all, it explains the Rashi at the end of Parshas Vayechi, which is not tonight's subject, but it tells us something fascinating about a little-known third dream. But the third dream is not spoken of. Yosef never articulates it. Why not? Why doesn't he articulate this dream? We don't know. But if he articulated, he must have articulated it because they hated him for it. When he came in and said, I have a dream. So they hated him because he had a dream? Well, he had a dream, so we have dreams too. He must have said something to them. And when he said, I had a dream, the Torah says, what was their response? Vayaged le'echov. He told it to his brothers. What was their response? They didn't say a word. We don't know what the dream was. Or maybe we do now. It just says, Vayasifu etznayasai. Now they really hate him. Before they hated him, now they really hate him. Okay, so you're Yosef. Your brothers hate you. Your brothers won't talk to you. And now, besides the fact that your brothers hate you and they won't talk to you, you flaunted it in their face and they said, you guys can't harm me anyway. There's nothing you could do to me. I had a dream. So they just hate him even more. So what's about the dumbest thing you could do? Now that you're in a situation where there's so much acrimony, so much hatred, so much dislike to you, what's the worst thing you could do? You can go and tell them a dream that I'm going to rule over you. Why did he do that? And they didn't like the dream. And they mocked the dream. What's the next verse now? Now that we understand verse 5, Yosef says, Shimuno hazais vayoymar aleihem. Take a look in verse 6, aleihem. You see how aleihem is spelled out? First of all, aleihem means plural. Aleihem means to them. He says to them. And aleihem is spelled with a yud. I want you to notice that, okay? Because we're going to focus on that for a moment. Let me tell you what our sages tell us. In the Medrash Lekach Tov it says, vayoymar aleihem, aleihem mole. Aleihem is written in its fullest iteration. That word yud does not always show up when you write the word aleihem. Oftentimes it would not. Why is it written in the full iteration? Why is the yud mentioned there? Melamed, says the Medrash Lekach Tov. Shahayaraya sha'ah shayakula mikubatsim. He didn't just go over and says, hey, Reuven, how you doing? Reuven doesn't talk to him, so let's ignore him. Reuven, I thought I should tell you about my dream I had last night. Maybe Reuven grunted. He said, you were bowing to me. No, he didn't do that. He waited aleihem. He waited until they were all together. Everybody together, all these brothers, a band of brothers, and Yosef walks into the middle of the band of brothers, and he says, hi, guys. I have something to tell you. I had a dream. Oh, great, you had a dream. He says, oh, yeah, this is an amazing dream. You got to listen to this. Shimun, you really have to listen to this. In fact, the Tosfos HaSholem builds on that medrash, and it says, Malei. How do you spell the word Malei? Aleihem. Look inside. You see how the word is written? Aleph, Lamed, Yud, Hey, Mem. How do you spell Mole? What's the extra letter in there? The extra letter is? Mole means full in Hebrew. So when you write out a word full, like the word Chanukah can be written Ches Nun Vav Chafei, Chanukah, so the Nun, that sounds like a Nu, is written with a Vav in front. Or you could write Chanukah Ches Nun Chafei. I'm just saying that because we're going to celebrate Chanukah soon. That's called Mole and Chaser. In Hebrew, you can write the word with its vowelations, or you can leave the vowelization out, and you just read the word that way. Aleihem could be spelled Aleph Lamed Hey Mem. And you would easily put a patach, or a tzere, and a segel, and it says Aleihem. But it said it's spelled Malay, which is Hebrew for full. So what's the letter that was added in? Yud. Says the Tosfos, how many brothers did he tell the story to? 10. Because Binyamin was a baby. And Binyamin is actually not represented in the story. Because Binyamin doesn't bow to him in this dream. In this dream, there's no Yaakov. In this dream, there's no father or mother. In this dream, there's just 10 brothers. The first time the brothers came to Mitzrayim and bowed to Yosef, how many brothers were there? 10. So he waited till all 10 of them were together. Okay? The angriest minion you'll ever find. He goes over to these 10 guys. He says, oh, Shimuna. Says Medrash Lekach Tov, Afa Pisha, Yodea. He knew where this is going. He knew they're going to go, oh my God, I can't believe this. Again, he's goading us. He knew this is Moisif and Lysina. Yosef was not fool, he's the wisest. He knew he's going to hate him even more. Loihoya Nimna Milasaper. He wouldn't contain himself. 1 second. Yosef's the master of self-containment. When Potiphar's wife throws herself at him, he comes within a hair's breadth, and he contains himself. The Medrash has graphic descriptions of how he contained himself. And he couldn't control himself. Like, you had to tell the brothers about it. You have to tell somebody about it. Go babysit Binyamin. Go for a walk with your little brother Binyamin and say, hey, Binyamin, listen, bro, we're going to be great someday. I'm telling you, I had this dream. All 10 of them, they're bowing to me, and you're my little brother, so I'm going to take care of you. I don't know. Find somebody to talk to. Talk to Yaakov. You had to go to all 10 brothers. Yaakov's not there. All 10 of them. And he had to stick it in the face. And he knew they're going to hate him. But he couldn't stop himself. He refused to stop himself. He had to go and tell them. And he didn't just say, I have a dream. What did he do? He said, Shimuna. You know what Shimuna means in Hebrew? Please listen. You really need to hear this. You really need to listen to this. And the Medrash Lekach Tov, he says, Melamed, that teaches us, Shahoya Mesaper, he was telling them, V'lohaya Makshivim. They said, well, we didn't hear. What? I don't know what you're talking about. They said, no, you need to listen to this. You really need to hear it. They weren't even willing to listen the first time around. And he's like, He talks to them till they listen. He says, you got to listen to this. What in heaven is he thinking? Why did you do this? Why did you make yourself all these problems for? Shimuna. The Sepharno says a mighty dicker thing. He says, you know what Shimuna means? He says, the word Shema in Hebrew means to listen. It means to listen. But you know what it really means? It really means to think and ponder deeply and understand. It's like, listen to this. Or a person says, ah, I hear what you're saying. It denotes understanding. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We all say it. What does it mean? Shema Yisrael doesn't mean to just listen. It doesn't mean to hear sounds. It means to understand it. He says, the Sepharno says, what the Medrash is telling us is, Hevinu es hayra'as achalayim. Do you understand the message of the dream, he said? He told him the dream. You're all going to be gathering sheaves. And I'm gathering sheaves, so we know whose bundle is whose. Because it's you just made the bundle. And then all of a sudden, my bundle stands itself up. And all of your bundles are bowing. Do you understand? Shimuna. Do you understand what's going on here? Do you understand what the metaphor is? Yosef, did you have to? Why? Why did you do this? It says the word vayaged. You know what vayaged? Vayaged, Reb Moshe HaDarshan, who Rashi oftentimes quotes, Rabbeinu Moshe HaDarshan said, he said the word vayaged is related to the word gid, gidim, or gidin. And when we want to talk about something which is tough or bitter, it says kosha aleim ki gidim. It was tough, like bitter, I think it's called rockworm or something, a ring rock or something, like it's a bitter herb. When God told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people that they're going to get a Torah, he said, Kosomar lebeis Yaakov, go and speak softly to the ladies, v'saged lebnei Yisrael, and you give it to the guys. You talk as tough as you can, because it's the only language men understand. Woman, you could talk softly. We have this idea, we talked about it in our last week's class, the Kli Yoker says when something's very hard to understand, we say, Koshe kigidin. It's tough like this root, this hard, almost rock-like root. So Reb Moshe HaDarshan says, he didn't say it. He didn't speak it softly. He didn't say, Vayomer. Vayomer is like softly spoken. No, Vayaged. He said, let me tell you about this dream. You are bowing to me, all of you. He said it was like nails on the blackboard. So no, we now know they hate him already from the last dream. They didn't even bother answering him. They just hate him even more. So if you thought that was a good idea to talk about your dreams, you already know from your first dream it was a really bad idea to talk about your dreams. And that even dream wasn't so offensive. That dream was just, you can't harm me. You can't get me. They hate him more than they hate him already. How much more can you hate somebody? You already don't talk to him, and now you hate him even more than that. And you know that it came because you told your dream. So you had to go and tell your dream you had another dream. You had to go when they were all together. All of them together. You had to make sure that it shamed everybody at the same time. Aleihem. And you had to tell Vayaged. You had to Shimuna. Like, do you understand what this means? This is like getting crazy. What in heaven is the point? Why did he do this? Reb Elazar Baal Rekeach says Vayaged also indicates replication. He didn't say it once. He kept talking about it. You hear the expression in English? Stop talking so much. You don't say stop saying so much. I said what I said and finished. No, the person talks too much. They don't say too much. Say is once. You say it. It even translates into English. I'll say it once. That's soimer, yoimer. Vayaged is, he's talking. Talks and talks and talks and talks. He's saying, Yiddish loves mission up. Leave me alone already. How many times do you have to talk and talk and talk? I mean, you read the verses, you understand what's going on in there. This is totally crazy. All right, let's skip a few verses. So we'll go through the dreams quickly. What's the dreams? The dreams are that the sheaves are gathered around and the sheaves are bowing. And then very interestingly, the next dream, then they hate him even more. And then he has another dream. And if that wasn't good enough, this one he had to tell not only his brothers, he also told his father. Verse 9, he tells his brothers. And then he goes to tell his father. Vayisaper, in verse 10, after he tells it to the brothers, he goes and tells it a second time to them. To talks and talks and talks. And this time, Vayisaper, now he tells it. El Aviv ve'el Echav. They already heard the dream in verse 9. They already hate him more. They can't stand him already. And he's telling it to them and to his father. Vayigar by Aviv. And his father erupts. He chides him. He says, what are you doing? Enough. Enough already, he says. How could you have such a dream? Does that make any sense? Havainovi ani ve'imcha ve'achecha? Am I going to come with your mother and your brothers to bow to you? What are you talking about? L'shtachves l'cha arza? Why? Because your mother's not alive. Your mother's not alive. So Yaakov's saying, just like that is obviously off mark, ridiculous, can't be. The whole dream is narishkeit. But Yaakov didn't really think so. He didn't think so. And Rashi tells us that Yaakov said that. He said that, but Rabbi Seinu Lamdu Mikan, our sages learn from here, She'ein chalom b'lo dvarim b'telim. There's no dream without some extraneous material in it. The dreams are never exact. This was a true dream. It all gets fulfilled. In fact, Rabbeinu Avram, the son of the Rambam, asked the question, and when did Yaakov bow to Yosef? When he came to Mitzrayim, Yosef was crying and Yaakov was busy saying Krishma. When did he bow? Where does it say? He says he bowed to the Pharaoh. Doesn't say he bowed to Yosef. So Rabbi Avram and Rambam says he did bow. Do you know when he bowed to him? When he came, when Yosef was called to his father's deathbed, it says, Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Hamita. He bowed. He doffed his head. Like he gave him a, out of deference, laying in a bed. So he never really fully bowed. But he did bow. There was a bow of sorts. The Torah uses the words Vayishtachu. Vayishtachu. And that says, and that he says is why this time the father hears the dream too. Ramban says, you know why the father has to hear the dream too? Because in the first dream, Yaakov doesn't appear. In the first dream, it's only the brothers. But in the second dream, it's not only the brothers, it's Yaakov himself too. And because Yaakov's in the dream, Yaakov needs to hear the dream. Really. That's like so nice. Because your brothers are in the dream, you have to tell it to your brothers. And you have this problem, you have to tell everybody everything. You have to go and tell it to your father, stick it to your father in your face. Your father loves you. You love your father. You have the most wonderful relationship. You have to say, hey, Dad, you're going to be bowing to me. What was he thinking? Why did he do this? Incidentally, Rashi uses the words that our rabbis learned that there's no dream without Dvarim Betelim. Dvarim in Hebrew is? I'm looking at Rashi in verse 10 now, by the way, if you want to look inside. Dvarim means, a davar is one thing. Dvarim is two things, or many things. Why did Yaakov say this? Yaakov said it, lahotzi hadavar milev banav. He wanted to take it out of the emotional arena. He wanted to kind of get the emotions away. He knew they're not going to forget about it. He wanted to neutralize the emotions. So he said, oh, come on, Yosef. What are you talking about? What kind of dreams is this? Your mother's going to bow to you. Shalai Yikanu. Yikanu, they shouldn't be jealous of him. Lekach Omar, that's why he said, Havoy Novoy. Maybe he really thought the dream was baloney. He really thought the dream meant nothing. Well, no, that can't be. Because right after that it says, Vayikanu Be'echav. Yaakov's efforts were fruitless. They were jealous of him. Ve'aviv Shamar Et Hadavar. Yaakov, he keeps this. He holds on to it. He didn't let go. He tells the brothers, let go of it. He doesn't let go of it. Why does he not let go of it? Rashi says, Mamtinu Mitzapa. He was waiting and anticipating the fulfillment of these dreams. So the question is, why was Yaakov waiting for the fulfillment of these dreams? The question is, what's the point? What's the point of this whole story? Yaakov's waiting. And it gets even weirder. There's a medrash that says that Yaakov not only waited, but the Bereishis Rabba says, Amar Rabbi Levi, not al komos, he took a pen, a feather, quill, v'kosav be'eza yoimu, be'eza shol, be'eza mokim. He jotted down in his journal, he jotted down in his diary, which day, which hour, and exactly where they were at the time. Now, why do you write things like that in a journal? Which day, which hour, which place? It's important. I want to remember this. I write this down so I don't forget. I want to write it down now when it's clear so I don't forget it. I'm writing this down. Why? Well,
If evidence, then why don't you write what he said? He didn't write anything that he said. He just wrote down a time, a day. He put a date. He put an hour. He put a location. It's like you begin a letter. He writes, starts off the letter, top of the letter, writes the date, writes the place, and doesn't write the letter. Well, if you want to remember it, why don't you write down what happened? Yaakov never wrote what happened. What's going on over here? Incidentally, this is kind of an aside, the Rebbe talks about this idea that it says dvarim, plural, but it was only davar. It was only that Rachel wouldn't beat it to bow down. So why say dvarim? So the Rebbe says there was actually a number of things that weren't fulfilled. Number one, Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu, of course, doesn't bow down to Yosef. She's not alive. Although Rashi tells us it refers to Bilhah, Ramban disputes that. But the other thing is that in the dream, the stars and the sun and the moon, they all bow equally. But in fact, it's not so. The brothers, they prostrate themselves fully. Yaakov just bows his head in deference. He never prostrates himself. So it's more than one thing that wasn't fulfilled exactly. It was dvarim. There was a number of things that weren't exactly fulfilled. That's just why Rashi uses that terminology. But bring us back to our point. What was up with this Yaakov writing down? Anyway, it's such an un-Jewish thing, bowing. Like Mordechai went to war over bowing to Haman. He wouldn't bow. I mean, our Mefarshim asked the question. Well, like, what was the big deal? Were you willing to incite this lunatic and bring about a final solution because he couldn't bow? And they say that Haman used to wear raiments that were covered with idolatrous icons. And he wanted, bowing to Haman, Haman saw himself as a demigod, but he wanted you to bow to his idol. So it weren't really bowing to Haman. So yeah, bowing to you is not bowing to an idol. It's not a proud moment when in Yosef's youth they have to bow to Esav. When Yaakov is humbled and bowing to Esav, why is he having these dreams already bowing to him? What is up with the subservience? And Yaakov waits for subservience? He can't wait till he's subservient to his son? He can't wait to see his brother subservient? Why? So we have two big issues here, which actually have the same answer. The two big issues are, number one, why in heaven did Joseph do something that at this point seems so outrageous? Seems downright stupid. Seems. Number two, why was Yaakov writing this down, preserving it, waiting for it? Why was he having dreams of subservience anyway? What's really going on here? The Mefarshim on the Medrash explain, Yifei Torah, the Eitz Yosef, that the reason that Yaakov wrote this down is, as you correctly said, evidence. Write it down when you remember it. You want to remember it. But the Rebbe asked the question that I asked you. So then write it down. He's like, you missed the whole point. Imagine a police officer sent off and he's got to write a report. Why does he have to write a report? Because he's going to be in court 6 months later. Do you think he's going to remember what happened? You remember what you had for breakfast 6 months ago? Of course, you remember your incident with the police officer because you have one incident in 6 months, or maybe in 6 years, or maybe in 60 years. But the police officer does this 60 times a day. So he has to sit down and write a report. And a lot of what officers do is write reports. Today they file it right away. It goes straight into a computer system. Not an internet, an extranet. They have a whole special system. So imagine the officer writes down, puts down the date, your violation, your ticket. Okay, he pulled you over, you have your ticket. Sometimes they still don't have their electric thing, they have to write it still. Writes down the date, writes down the time, and writes down the intersection. That's all. 6 months later, you're in court. The judge looks at the ticket. He says, December 21st, 9:30 p.m., Bathurst and Flamingo. What happened? Oh, I don't know. Well, you wrote a ticket here. Why did you give him a ticket? I wrote the date. Thank you. I took the hour. That's great. I got a location. Wonderful. So what in heaven happened? What did Yaakov do here? So the Rebbe explains that there's something that we're missing. We're missing. We're missing a much, much bigger picture. Yeah, Barbanel talks about this. The Or HaChaim, the Malbim. And I'll soon show you the sources. They said that the reason that Yosef spoke about his dreams to his brothers was because the Gemara tells us that a dream is like a minor prophecy. And in order for the dream to be actualized, it has to be spoken about. It has to be interpreted. Not only spoken of by the dreamer, but it has to be spoken of and interpreted by others. And the Gemara tells a story about two sages who had almost identical dreams, and they went to a person who was well known for interpreting dreams. One sage paid, one sage didn't. To the one who paid, he gave beautiful interpretations. To the one who didn't, he gave bad interpretations. Both came true. The ones, the dreams interpreted in a negative fashion came true in a negative way. The dreams interpreted in a positive fashion came true in a positive way. The same dream. Now this is a very difficult Gemara to understand. Very, very nuanced. I'm not even going into that. I'm not going to get into how does that work. How could it be that somebody's interpretation can make a difference? He paid and he didn't pay. That's a subject for another day. But what we do see in the Gemara is that the way the dream is interpreted and interpreted verbally has everything to do with what will happen. Consider this. This is a quote from the Zohar. The Zohar says, with regard to Yosef's dream, it says they hated him even more after he told them about the dream. So the Zohar says, Lo mi boyle le barnash le meimer chalme bar hahu barnash de rochim le. When you tell about your dreams, tell it to somebody who likes you. Tell it to somebody who cares for you. Ve'ilav, ihu gorim. If you don't, if you tell it to the wrong person, you will be the cause. Dahahu chalma mishapech legavna achara. That same dream could turn into different hues or colors. Like a black and white negative. It's a different picture. Same exact picture. Reverse the coloring. Ihu gorim lesalka. You become the cause of the removal of the possible blessings. The dream is an envelope of those blessings. By properly interpreting the dream, it becomes actualized. Make sure you go to a good guy. Make sure you go to a friend. And the Zohar says, I'll prove it to you. Toch azid Yosef. What happened to Yosef? Omar chalma le'achva. He spoke of his dream. He told his dream to his brothers. Valdo gormu le'lesalka. Chalmei, they caused the dream to be delayed for trein v'asrin shnin. It was delayed 22 years. The Isakiv. Why? Because they properly interpreted the dream. But they said, you think this is going to happen? Because they said in that fashion, because they poo-pot his dream and said this is never going to be, the dream was delayed 22 years. And Yosef had a lot of trouble in between. Here's a Medrash Lekach Tov. Shimuna, please? You really got to hear this? Why? Mipnei ma mefayis lahem lishmoya. Why was he begging them to listen to him? It's crazy. They're just going to hate you. Says the Lekach Tov. Shari omru chachomim chalma deloy mishpura ki igeres deloy mikri. A dream that's not interpreted. It's like a letter that was never read. Or a modern syntax, an email that was never opened. You know, if you don't open the virus, it won't do anything to the computer. Just delete it. If you don't open the email that has your upgrade, it won't do anything good to your computer. You need to open the email. Your device has to read the information. The dream is an envelope. It's a convention through which something's being conveyed to you. But you got to read it. So this becomes the source of the Abarbanel's teaching, where Abarbanel and the Ur HaChaim say that the reason that Yosef wanted his dream to be heard, Shimuna, but he didn't just want it to be heard. He wanted them to respond. He said, do you understand? They spoke to him. They did react. And they did say, what do you think we're going to bow to you? Why did Yosef need them to say? They're not talking to you. You got to hear this. And Vayagid, he told them and told them and told them. And it was so hard for them to hear it. Why was he so insistent? Why couldn't he contain himself? The Baalei HaTosfos say something absolutely incredible. The Baalei HaTosfos say, they ask this question, our question of tonight. The Im Toimer. Im Toimer, says the Moshe of Zakenim, the collection of Baalei HaTosfos. Ish kamayu ka Yosef. A person like Yosef, who was navin v'chacham, who was wise and discerning and understanding. Echa yemisaper b'fnei echav. What was he doing? How did he go and tell this to his brothers? He knew so well and he saw how much they hated him. And they hated him because of his dream. The first dream that we didn't talk about, which he never interpreted. Every day, the jealousy increases. It deepens. You had to go and stick it in their face? Says the Balei HaTesvos, V'yeshleimer de Yosef ha'ya bar chakim. Yosef was indeed wise. He was a visionary. V'roh bas peklaria. He could see. He could see that this is not an empty dream. He saw that this is destiny. He knew that Yaakov's future came through a dream. That Yaakov's life changed through a dream. And that dream was a prophecy. And that dream was a message. And that dream became the mantra of the Jewish people. And Yosef understood that it's not just a dream. That these dreams that he's having, they're profound dreams. They're meaningful dreams. In fact, Yosef saw these dreams as a form of minor prophecy. And what's the halacha? The Amru Rabbi Seinu, our rabbis teach, HaKoivish Nevuasai, a person who gets a prophecy and doesn't talk about it. Why would somebody get a prophecy and not talk about it? Nobody would believe you. That's one good reason. What's another good reason? Let's think about the prophets of Israel. Were they popular? You think they could have won an election? I don't think so. Not only could they not win an election, one of the prophets was brutally murdered. He was lynched. Yirmiyahu, the Navi, was thrown into prison by his own grandson and threatened with death. Zechariah was murdered in the Beis HaMikdash. So the prophets were not popular. And when Yirmiyahu gets his first prophecy, he's terrified. He says, I can't go tell that to them. And God says, you can't tell that to them. You think I don't know who you are? The first chapter of Yirmiyahu. Beterem etzarcha, bebeten, before I formed you in my stomach, I knew you. I gave you the strength. This is not an optional prophecy. Who is the most famous prophet who didn't want to tell anybody his prophecy? He got a message to deliver, and he didn't want to deliver the message. Yonah. He said, I'm not delivering that message. He tried to run away from God. How well did that go? It didn't go so well. So our rabbis taught, HaKavish Nevuasai, a person's got a prophecy, and he keeps it under the wraps. I'm not sharing this. Who wants to be unpopular? Who wants to give a sermon which is unpopular? Give a sermon that's popular. Everybody will love you. Tell them they're great, they're fantastic, it's wonderful. And you're so popular. You can win an election. That's not your job, dude. Your job is not to be popular. Your job is to speak words of truth. Your job is to influence people in a positive fashion. Your job is to bring them home to Hashem. And guess what happens when you speak words of truth? The truth hurts. There's a medrash of Bereishis Rabbah that says, Vayomer Shimuna. He said, listen in to me. The Bereishis Rabbah says, Kach yiyu hanaviyim mechichim eschem. Yosef said to his brothers, this is a precursor of the future. This is how the prophets will come to the children of Israel and they will rebuke them. And they will not be popular for it. This is going to happen. Shimuna. Listen in what I'm going to tell you now. And then we find these words very, very often in later prophets. Shimuna. So the Balei HaTesvos say, HaKevish Nevuasai, if you take this prophecy and you keep it to yourself, what happens? The halacha is Misa. A death penalty. Who will carry out a death penalty? Nobody else knows. You have to have witnesses, a court. Obviously, it's not a death penalty. Not by a court. Hashem says, you'll die prematurely. Pirush, Novi, Hamalim umechasa hanavua, the Navi who conceals the Navua, Shemaran Leiman HaShemayim, that he's shown from heaven, Chayiv Misa Bidei Shemayim. He forfeits his life. God says, I gave you a job to do. You have a mission, a purpose. Do your mission, a purpose, or I have no need for you. That's why I sent you to this world. Omar, says the Tosfos, he said, Yosef, Mutav She'epel Bidei Adam. It's better I should be hated by people. I'll fall into their hands. Umisafik. And not so barach mishamayim. God will help me. I don't know. I'll put myself in a precarious situation. No, God will save me. Misha epoil bide oven shamayim chalila. Then God forbid to fall into disfavor with God. So Yosef has a problem. He's got a prophecy on his hands. He needs the prophecy to be interpreted.
Who should interpret the prophecy but the one that the prophecy is about? Who should interpret the dream but the people that he dreamed about? Who should interpret the dream? So the first dream is about the brothers. So he comes to the brothers. He says, this one you have to listen to. The first dream is a dream. You can't harm me. No matter what you're going to try to do, you can't harm me. He told it to them. It's verbalized. They knew what it meant. How do we know they knew what it meant? Because they hated him for it. If they hated him for it, clearly they knew. The second dream you need to listen to this. This is a prophecy. This is a nevuah. The nevuah is only going to happen if you're going to verbalize it. So they do verbalize it. But how do they verbalize it? You think we're going to do this? You are such a fool to think that that would happen? And because of the way they verbalized it, the Tzar says it was delayed 22 years. What choice did Yosef have? He didn't have a choice. Who ruined things? The brothers ruined things. Yosef was doing the best he could. Yosef was in a rock and a hard spot. There's a fascinating Ur HaChaim. The Ur HaChaim says that it says three times in verse 7, Vihine, Vihine, Vihine. Vihine is like, and behold. So the Ur HaChaim says, when a person has a dream where everything is crystal clear, where it's not just a cloudy vision, but everything's crystal clear, and you wake up in the morning, you remember every single detail and vivid color. He says, that is a sign, a ot umofet, that's a wonder. It's a sign, ki nevuahu min hashamayim, that's actually a message you're getting from heaven. And a message from heaven like that doesn't have bilbul, doesn't have confusion, doesn't have obfuscation. It's clear. That's what Yosef is explaining to him. He says, guys, you need to hear this dream. Vihine. And he says, vihine. Vihine is a word that's, and behold, it was so obvious. It was so clear to me. As if I could see it now. So the Rebbe says, aha. Now we understand why Yosef needed to tell his dreams. So what's the problem? The problem is Yaakov understood this very well. Yaakov knew exactly what was going on here. But Yaakov just verbalized the opposite. Yaakov just did what the brothers did. Yaakov just said, oh, come on. You expect me to take that seriously? Your mother's not alive. He did that to make peace in the family. But Yaakov needs to do something now to show that he does take the dream seriously. So what could he do to show that he took the dream seriously? Because Yaakov does interpret the dream. And he says, you think it means such and such and such. He interprets the dream. But he says, don't take that seriously. So how did he show that which he interpreted was meant seriously? He made a record of it. He wrote it in his journal. He wrote the day. He wrote the hour. He wrote the place. He didn't have to write the dream. He already interpreted the dream. The problem was that he said something which would indicate that the interpretation of the dream was somehow not valuable, not important. So Yaakov has to show it is valuable and important. And that he did by writing it down. And once he wrote it down, it was obvious and clear that he took this seriously. He needed to do nothing more than write the day, the hour, the place. The interpretation itself, that had already been given. When you see it in this prism, all of a sudden it's a different picture here. Yosef is a man who is burdened with prophecy. He's a man who's burdened with the dream. So what is this dream about? Why is it so important that Yaakov looks forward to this? So first of all, Rashi uses two words to explain Va'aviv Shamar. He uses the word Mamtin Umitzapa. I want you to take a look in the Rashi. This is really important. Look in the Rashi. Rashi says Mamtin Umitzapa. Mamtin means he's waiting. Let me tell you what waiting is like. You ever been to the dentist's office and you sit and wait? Positive thing or negative thing? He's like, I can't wait to go back to that dentist and sit and wait. Why does the doctor book six patients at the same time? Because he doesn't want to wait. Mamtin is not a positive word. How about mitzape? Mitzape means anticipate. When you're waiting actively. When you're waiting excitedly. When you're counting down to your wedding. When you're counting down to seeing a good friend. When you're counting down to a wonderful day or an experience. You await, you anticipate. Anticipate is a very positive thing. Nobody anticipates misery. They wait for it. You wait for the shoe to drop. You don't actively await. It's waiting and awaiting. One A makes all the difference in English.
Mamtinu mitzapim means Yaakov waited and awaited. And very interestingly, Rashi brings two psukim. This is a strange Rashi. Rashi could have gotten away with one word. Shomer is a dover. Either say, either mamtin, or either say mitzapim. Either say wait, or say await. Why does Rashi say? He awaited and awaited. He waited and awaited. What's the point? And Rashi brings two psukim. V'cheni says, I'll prove it to you. Shomer emunim. The word shomer means that he keeps his faith. This is a verse in the 26th chapter of Isaiah, where it speaks about the Jewish people who keep their faith and await for Hashem. They await, they're loyal, they await redemption. We don't wait for redemption. We're supposed to await. The Rambam says it's not good enough to believe Mashiach will come someday. The Rambam says, "Kol mi she'enei maimin bay." Anybody who doesn't believe that Mashiach will come. Umechake libiyosai, and await his coming. If you don't not only believe Mashiach could or even will come, but if you don't actively await Mashiach's coming, the Rambam says you have then left the building as far as Judaism is concerned. You deny Moses, you deny the prophets. That's the words of the Rambam. So there's a big difference in waiting and awaiting. Awaiting is a positive thing. What's the next pasuk? Rashi brings down another pasuk. V'chein lo tishmar al chatosi is a verse in Eov where Eov says, I can wait for punishment. You don't have to do it now. I understand, I got to get a spanking. So your kid says, I know I have to get docked, but I can wait. It's okay. I'm not running to do this. It's a strange Rashi. Contradiction of terms. I'm waiting and awaiting. A pasuk that's positive, a pasuk that's negative. So the Rebbe says, it's so poshut, it's so simple. There's a positive element and a negative element. The positive element is Yosef's sovereignty and Yosef's leadership. That's what Yaakov was looking for. He was hoping for, planning for. He was actively trying to get there. On the other hand, it means golos. Golos is not something Yaakov awaited. He waited for the shoe to drop. He didn't await its coming. So there was a negative and a positive here. Shomar Sadover means Yaakov took it seriously, but with a heavy heart. On one hand, he wanted to see Yosef rise to that position. On the other hand, he was very, very unhappy and uncomfortable. It was a heavy heart that accompanied this waiting, because he knew that that's going to happen in a way that's beyond the pale of the life that they had come to enjoy living in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Of course. He knows that. And Esav knew it too. That's why Esav said, I'm not going to stay in Israel, because whoever stays here goes into Golos. He says, I'm out of here. I'm going to Seir. There's a bill to be paid. He says, I don't want to pay that bill. I don't got the blessings. I don't want the curses. He says, you keep the curse of being Jewish. You go through Mitzrayim. You let your children be tortured by it. I don't want to do that. Of course they knew. Of course. Which brings us back to our original question, and with this we'll conclude. So what was so great about this? What's so positive about this? Why is it a good thing? Yaakov can't wait for it to happen. It's a wonderful thing. We started off the class by talking about the unique qualities of Yosef. Do you know that Yosef is referred to as Hatzadik, the righteous? All of Yaakov's children are righteous. Elsewhere it's written that Kulam Tzadikim, they're all righteous. But Yosef is the only one who's called Hatzadik. And even Binyamin, who's called Tzadik, in Binyamin in the Zohar is called Tzadik Tachton, the lower Tzadik. Yosef's called Tzadik Elyon. Now when you think of a Tzadik, what would you tend to think of? A person is wrapped in a talis. Maybe like Baba Sali. Totally removed from the world. Or would you think of a guy who's wearing Armani suits, ballet shoes, the sharpest tie, or the equivalent in ancient Egypt of the starched linen robes, those funny-looking hats? You know, like the ancient Egypt pictures. What do you think Yosef looked like? What do you think he looked like? You think he looked like a politician dressed to the nines? Or you think he looked like a rabbi in the middle of Davening Musaf? What do you think he looked like? The former, he's a prime minister. We hear about Yosef getting dressed. He gets dressed for the occasion. Yosef was resplendent, a strikingly handsome person. He dressed the part. He carried himself presidentially. He was the awe. Everybody was in awe of Yosef. The young girls just wanted to get a glimpse of him. They climbed on the walls just to get a glimpse. Yosef is like the last picture of a tzaddik. If you had to draw a tzaddik, The last tzaddik you'll draw is Yosef. And yet he's called tzaddik Elyon. What did the rest of the Shvatim look like? You know, like some shepherds, like biblical figures, you know, like with robes and like a stick and like sheep around them look really holy. And like, it says Yosef's brothers met him. He recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. Why? Because he left without a beard. His beard grew. There's something much more profound than beard grew, it didn't. They didn't understand how it's possible to be in a state of total communion and devotion to Hashem, to live with a higher form of consciousness, to be absolutely dedicated to the highest and loftiest spiritual ideals, and to live in the real world, to walk the halls of power, to deal with the intrigue of a court, of a royal ensemble, to deal with the realities of government. Politics destroys you. Yosef lived this. You know how long Yosef lived? It says, it's brought down that it says, V'hine kama alumasi v'gam nitzava. V'gam nitzava. So the Sepharno says, what's v'gam nitzava? In the entire scripture, nobody ever had as long a tenure as Joseph. He was the king for 80 years. 80 years. For 80 years, he walked the halls of power. For 80 years, he ran the country with an iron fist. Tzaddik Elyon? The Shevatim couldn't fathom that. They couldn't fathom. How can he be a holy Jew and be involved in the real world, in the secular world? How can that be? You want to be a real Jew, live in a ghetto. You want to be a Jew, live in Meir Shorim. You want to be a Jew, wrap yourself in things and hang out with the sheep, and the sheep won't influence you in a bad way, and that's it, you'll be a holy Jew. And the truth is that the Shevatim couldn't do what Yosef did. Nobody could do what Yosef did. That's why he's the Tzaddik Elyon. He's the Tzaddik Elyon, he's our spiritual knight in shining armor, because Yosef can live in this kind of reality and still remain connected to Hashem. He is the ultimate spiritual hero. That's our lodestar. We are not supposed to be ghettoized. We're not supposed to escape from the world and live in the Himalayas. That's not the Jewish ideal. That was the mistake of the scouts who said, let's stay in the desert. The Torah idea is to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Torah idea is to have government. The Torah idea is live with politics and all the things that should get in the way of spirituality. Never for a moment, for a millisecond, disconnect yourself from dveikus, from highest form of cleaving to Hashem. That's Yosef's merit. That's his virtue. He was a towering spiritual giant. Yaakov saw this in the young Yosef. In the teenager, Yaakov saw that he was head and shoulders above his brother. He saw that his brothers were stuck in a certain mold. They couldn't see past that. Very righteous. So how does Yaakov's brothers, how are they going to get out of this box? How will they be able to transcend that frame, that narrow form of what we typically think of or conjecture in our minds when we talk about holiness? The answer is Yosef has to lead them. The answer is when they will recognize the supremacy of Yosef's Aveda. To bow means to bow one's head in submission. To bow means to acknowledge. To bow means to recognize the supremacy, the greatness of something. Yaakov waited for the brothers to be able to appreciate who Yosef was, but they couldn't appreciate him. He confounded them. He got in their way. He frustrated them.
Didn't Judah break that mold?
Yehuda does break their mold to some degree. And it all happens through Yosef. Sometimes it's through Yosef's direct intervention, and ultimately it's when Yosef was taken away, but it's because of the story of Yosef. It's all Yosef. The whole thing, everything revolves around Yosef after this. Yosef was sold. Yosef was gone. They went to look for Yosef. It all revolves around Yosef. That's what Yaakov was waiting for. Yaakov was waiting for Yosef. He said, Yosef will take them to the true heights. He will elevate the people. He will put them into a higher place. He will develop the paradigm of Judaism. Because that really is the paradigm of Judaism. The paradigm of Judaism is dira b'tachtonim, a dwelling place for Hashem in this physical, literal world. Judaism does not advocate escapism and aestheticism. Judaism advocates bringing holiness to dark places, like the Hanukkah menorah that's outside. So now we know what this is all about. Now we understand why Yosef understands this when the brothers don't. They can't even speak to him because they're so frustrated. He just confounds them. They don't realize that he's head and shoulders, eons ahead of them. But Yosef needs them to interpret the dream so that he can actualize it and help them reach their potential, like a true prophet, deeply unpopular,
but trying to change the people. Yosef wants to elevate his brothers, and he has no better methodology available. And because the brothers can't see it, it causes a delay, a very painful, an agony-filled 22 years. But in the end, it happens. And at the very end of the Chumash, the dream is actualized. Yosef reminds them of the dream. He says, you remember? 10 candles? What's a candle? Candles are neshama. What does a candle do? It gives light. He says, you have your candles. You couldn't extinguish my candle. Different kind of candle Yosef was. A tzaddik elyon. 10 candles couldn't extinguish the candle of Yosef. He says, why would I extinguish? I'm not here to hurt you, chas v'shalom. I'm not here to denigrate you. I'm not here to rob you of anything. I'm here to make you you. I want you to become all you can be. And that speaks to their hearts. Because Yosef is saying, Anochi achalkel, I'll provide to you. You think he was just talking about food? I'll provide to you spiritually. And ultimately, it's Yosef's coffin that remains in the land of Egypt because they had the oil, they had a place to daven. They couldn't go to Hebron, but they had the grave of Yosef to daven at. And Yosef says, as my coffin will be here, my spirit will continue to be with you. Unfortunately, the Jewish people made some very serious mistakes. And they deviated far, far from the vision of Yosef. They embraced the superficial reality of Yosef without understanding the etzem. But when the sea saw Atzmos Yosef, he saw the essence of Yosef, which the name of Yosef, as the Rebbe explains, means Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Rachel said, another son. The spiritual meaning of that is to make a balshuva, bring another yid home to the Eibishter, bring another child home. The etzem of Yosef, of influence, of transformation, of turning others around. When the sea saw that, the sea shrank. And that's where we began. That's the beginning of the story. We started the class talking about the sea that split because of Yosef. The sea couldn't split because of the brothers. It split because of who Yosef was. Because of that virtue, because of that value, because of Yosef's unique approach to spirituality, because of his vision of Yiddishkeit. So now our questions become answered. Now the whole thing makes so much sense. Now we can appreciate what's going on here. And there are two takeaways. The first takeaway is, the first thing is, that if there's a lesson in this, it's about what is Jewish spirituality really about? The Yosef paradigm. And well, we can't do it on our own. And that's where we needed Rebbe. And that's why Yosef has two dreams, Rebbe says. It's two dreams. There's dreams of people, farmers, and then there's dreams of those who are in the sky, stars in the sky. The Medrash says stars are like tzaddikim. Some people think that people involved in the farm or in business, they need a Rebbe. They need a crutch. They need somebody to help them. But people who are stars, they have to bow to a Rebbe too. The answer is, yeah, there's one Yosef. There's a whole Bnei Yisrael, there's one Yosef. And by being connected to a higher neshama, by being able to be elevated by the higher neshama, we can all reach our own potential. That's one takeaway. And another takeaway is, if you have a vivid dream, you better get it interpreted. Talk to somebody who likes you. Talk to somebody who cares about you. Because if a dream is interpreted properly, wonderful things can happen. I once had a story. A distraught parent came to me. They had a very frightening dream about a child. Very frightening dream. And on a terrestrial level, it's like a spooky dream. I said, Ebono Shel Olam, give me some help me here. If it fell on my lap, the Eibishter must give me the koyach for it. So I talked about negative traits that the child had. I said, those negative traits will die away. Those negative traits will fall away. And he'll become like a wonderful child. It was incredible. That school year, the child experienced a full transformation. I'm not a tzaddik, I promise you. I have no powers anybody doesn't have. I'm a regular person, right? But if you get stuck in a situation, the Eibishter gives you koyach. It doesn't say it has to be a tzaddik. It was Rav and Abaya, two great tzaddikim that went to a dream interpreter who was a scoundrel who was taking money. I don't think I'm a scoundrel, but get your dreams interpreted. Because if you don't click on the email and open it, it just goes into the trash bin. Download the system. Sometimes Hashem gives us gifts. And if He gives us those gifts, we should utilize them. And the dream can be Hashem's way of giving you something wonderful. Just make sure you get it actualized, opened, read, and downloaded.